Hey everybody, it's Chronically Me. I'm here with a new friends, Niche and Possum, who are neurodivergent artists. So if you guys would like to say hello.
Hello.
Hello, I'm Niche.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
Possum, sorry.
Good idea to distinguish the voices, actually.
I make a noise every now and then.
Yeah, awesome. So we were just talking about trying to get a diagnosis for autism. If any of you guys wanted to talk about that, because you're both undiagnosed, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know for me, Possum, I went through a really serious episode of being mentally unwell, and then I saw a private psych, and she did this little test on me and brought up with me the possible diagnosis of PDA, which is pathological demand avoidance, it's not really known of in Australia. And then trying to get the diagnosis, I was about 26 at the time, but trying to get the diagnosis, you have to have a parent to relay your developmental history. And I wasn't in contact with my mum, and my dad had passed away. And I went through even private, I looked into through the Autism Association, which would have, you know, other ways of doing it if you couldn't go through there, which is the public. And you have to have a parent to lay your developmental history. My mum would not do it. So I ended up just making myself really knowledgeable on PDA and the basics of stimming and letting myself sort of come out of that shell. Informing people around me, but yeah, that was it.
I add in something interesting about trying to get an autism diagnosis?
Please.
If you want to go through the public system, you can, but if you have any mental health conditions, they will not accept your application.
Interesting.
Which I find very...
I never knew that.
Yeah.
Kind of funny because undiagnosed autism, neurodivergence, obviously there's a big overlap between mental health struggles.
Yeah, you guys bring up some significant barriers to getting autism diagnosis, that you need your parents' approval and acceptance of that you have that diagnosis, and needing to not have mental illness. I feel like the whole experience of growing up not fitting into society and struggling with things and not knowing why to be quite traumatic and will therefore bring mental illness. I do feel like there's quite an overlap between autistic and mentally ill people.
As well, anxiety is a very common symptom of autism as well.
That's really weird.
Pretty much nearly any mental illness is a comorbid, you're going to have that correlating with autism and ADHD. I don't know, that doesn't make... Did they say why?
I don't know. I gave up on that.
Crazy. Yeah. No, it's also, even once you've done the forms, so say you get the forms done, blah, 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 you have to wait over 6 to 8 months just to get your initial assessment.
Wow.
And it costs thousands of dollars.
Well,
that.
Through Autism Association, it's free, but that's why you have to wait so long. Mm-hmm. Privately, I looked into it thinking, I could maybe get it without my parents. Over $9,000, and I was what the fuck? And no, we still need your mum to come in. I was okay.
Yeah. That is a lot of money. And I think, why self-acceptance and self-identification is really important. Mm. But also, to get support, either NDIS or education support, employment support, you need a diagnosis or you need a doctor that believes you. And both of those things are really inaccessible.
I've actually had a psychiatrist and a psychologist in the public system, I guess, informally diagnosed me with autism, but because it's not private or recorded, it doesn't count, quote unquote.
You haven't gone through the assessment. Because I did want to get on the NDIS for a while because I really wanted a support worker.
Yeah.
And no one out there has the money to pay someone $30 to $40 an hour.
Some are 60.
No, I'm on the DSP. I'm getting $400 to $500 a week. I don't have that. That's what, and then you can't get on the NDIS. I completely forgot.
What about disability pension? Is that the DSP?
So I got on the DSP literally writing a a case file of my life, like everything. I went and got my school reports, like I did everything, and I almost like had to lie, like, you know, I felt like I had to dramatize
mm-hmm.
the way that I was feeling, because you have to have like a phone consult with like a government psychologist. You have to have a video consult. I had to have a video consult. There's all these steps. And then that still takes months. And then, I mean, like, it is helpful getting that little bit extra money, but $500 a week, like, you know, what is the cost of living these days?
I found it quite empowering and validating when I went on the DSP, just in terms of, like, it affirms what I was going on inside. But in order to get it, like, we had to write, those reports don't paint a pretty picture, and it's kind of sad. Like,
yeah, I can
it's imagine, like, the worst case scenario.
I can imagine it would be really emotional to have to say everything you struggle with and to, like, give your worst case scenario all the time just to get the support.
It's like proving that you're disabled. It's a weird one.
Yeah, I can get how that would be validating, because, like, with invisible illnesses, or, like, neurodivergency, you often feel like you're not disabled enough because other people can't see or other people don't understand.
Yeah.
It's actually really weird for me, living in between spaces where sometimes I'm very visibly disabled and, like, we're in the back of the pub making funny noises, skimming, and, like, you feel like a fucking crazy person. But then other times you're just, like, masking or, you know, normal.
Fitting in.
And so it's weird. It's weird going between those two identities and being, I just want to be seen for who I am, like, not have to fit into one box or the other, but I don't know.
I can imagine that, like, the environment you're in plays a big role to, like, how comfortable you feel and how accommodated you are. And just, like, the culture of the environment that you're in is not always the physical space.
Yeah, definitely.
I found that, like, especially, like, the one biggest thing for me getting on the DSP was that no one would hire me. Like, I am very honest. Every time I, like, would apply for work, I would say, like, look, I have these things, and sometimes I'm going to need accommodating, and, you know, like, just, I don't know, I found it better to be honest, but they just would, as soon as you say anything about being on the spectrum or having a mental illness, they just, like, turn a blind eye. Like, it's too hard for them. They don't want to accommodate, or they just don't understand, which was shit.
I totally get that. I struggled a lot to get employed, accommodations and stuff, but just having people understand is really difficult as well. Like, I've never disclosed mental illness just because, I'm scared of how people will react. Accessing education and employment can be really difficult just for that reason. You're like, I can do it, I just need someone to give me the chance.
Yeah, exactly. And they don't even give you the chance, which is why it's shit, because I feel like we're already ostracized enough. But then not being able to work, like, you know, and, like, how do you make a living on the DSP, or, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's very limiting. Like, you can't do that much.
I went for a job interview, funnily enough, at, like, a disability support service as an arts technician. You know, ticked all the boxes, smashed the interview, but on the form you disclose any medical conditions, and I lied. I did not disclose my mental health condition.
Yeah.
Because I'm scared of the discrimination and the stigma.
Absolutely.
And the taboo that is carried with it.
Yeah, and I always felt bad about it because they were like, you know, saying leading information on this form is a crime. And it's really, like, intimidating. But I think disclosure is a very personal thing. And especially when you do face negative consequences for it.
I mean, I did get a call back for the job, and I did actually turn it down. But even that in myself was... I felt like I was hiding who I am.
Mm-hmm.
When you spend so much time trying to feel proud of who you are and feel proud of your neurodivergence and your disabilities, but then when you're the one hiding yourself, it's weird shame cycle.
It goes against that, like, acceptance that you've been trying to teach yourself and be like, it's okay to be disabled.
Yeah. I feel like in those, like, saying how you lied.
Yeah.
You're, like, damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Because you actually, don't you have to legally, you have to say.
And then you have to go to the doctor and get medical clearance.
And so, like, even if you do that, they're still going to say no, so you don't do it. And I don't know, you just feel
cornered. Are they legally allowed to ask, though?
Apparently.
Because I feel like...
For some jobs,
yeah. Yeah, if it's, like, to meet the requirements of the job. But I feel like that gives them the opportunity to discriminate as well.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. I went for a FIFO job and everything was going well. Went with my friend and then they take you. So you do all this group stuff. Then they take you away and they ask you questions and like everything was going really well. And then like I was watching this lady like write down and then she said that question, you know, do you have any mental illness, disability, blah, blah. I was like, oh, you know, well, I just started self-advocating. I was like, this is the only way. Also, I feel like if you are confident enough to self-advocate and like really go through with it, you know, I don't know. I really believe in self-diagnosis because of all the barriers to try and get diagnosed anyway. But as soon as I said to her, I was like, oh, look, I do have autism and PDA. Like, you know, you get a bit into it. And she just looked at me like it was already over. Like I could just tell. And she was just, she just like had emotionally cut off from the conversation.
Like that switch. Yeah. She just ruled you out. Yeah. Like, nah, and was not like, even going to consider you.
And the funny thing was, every person was meant to get a call back either way. And I never got a call back from anyone. Wow. And I kept ringing up like, hey, because I went with my friend to do it and they got a call back and there was like 30 people there. And I was like, it said like, we will call you either way to inform you if you have or haven't proceeded. And no one ever called me back. No one ever emailed me back.
Wow.
Nothing.
Yeah. But like so many people have mental illness. Like it's very common. But there's still so much stigma around it.
Which, it's just, I don't know.
I do feel grateful to live now with this mental illness as opposed to even 40 odd years ago or more where people like us were institutionalized and locked up and labeled crazy and that was that.
But I think I watched so many documentaries about the people that were like locked in wards, strapped to beds, like left, you know, and I think like, far out if that was the way it was now. Like, I mean, even just with like,
to be honest though, I have spent time in the wards and it is dehumanizing and they do treat you like animals and they don't respect your human rights. Like, it's obviously better than it was, but it could be better. They could be a bit more compassionate.
I feel like it's still the same, like in the way of you're just treated like another number. Like they want you in and out as quickly as possible.
They sedate you.
They just sedate you with medication that numbs your feelings, doesn't fix the problem, but gets rid of the symptoms until you have to keep coming back. And then they get money. It's all a bit fucked. It is.
I mean, Band-Aid solutions.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. And especially with like even public and private health, the mental health system is so flawed, doesn't have enough. There's not enough to go around for anyone. Even if you have private health, you can't get the help you need. I've went through my mum buying me the top tier private health and I still couldn't get just a basic like psychologist like every week to talk to without having to pay $160. And yes, you get a bit of a Medicare rebate, but like I don't have that money like lying around and I needed someone to talk to like every week. Like I just needed that person. And even through private systems, like I got to the point where I was just turned away. They won't even, they're like, just, you know, you've been coming here for years, just use the skills that we've taught you. And I'm like, what fucking, like, what skills? Like, even if I learnt them, they're gone right now in that moment where I feel absolutely in control of my brain. And they just, it's just fucked. I think that even like the way like Nish was saying, like, treating you like animals, like, I think the way that they go about helping people with mental illness is just completely wrong. Like, why are we put in, like, a white room with, like, a bed? And I don't know, I feel like being an artist, like, I have learned so much healing and had so much healing through art that I would just open up a farmland for mentally ill people and just be like, let's paint every day. I don't know, like, I mean, just so clinical.
That's why we're artists, right? Yes. Yeah. My one ethos is a sustainable art practice for a sustainable mind.
Yeah.
And that shit keeps us alive. Like, when we wake up and have nothing to do, like, we can make art. Yeah. When in those, like, darkest moments or not.
And we're actually expressing it, like, being in a mental ward or even just in general. Like, people these days don't have creativity in their lives. Like, they think, oh, I can't do it, but it's not even about that.
People are afraid of that, aren't they? They're, oh, I'm shit at art. I'm like, bro,
it's not about the end product.
It's not about the what you make, it's about the making. It's yeah. about the doing. If what you yeah. produce is fucked and shit, good. Like, you got something out. You yeah. got some feelings out.
Exactly. Do it with feeling. And even, like, little things, like, oh, choose your colours to your feelings, and then you can start small, but, like, it just, I don't know, if you're angry, like, fucking scribble. Like, get yeah. dirty. Like, we use our hands.
We
like,
dip our hands in rotting paint buckets and throw it at each other.
Yeah, like, I don't know.
It's expression yeah. and it's exactly. also sensory bliss. Like, yeah. And getting messy and... Because humans are messy, right?
Mm. Yeah, and so complicated. I feel like if you're constantly surrounded in this environment that's very clinical and very focused on your mental illness, it kind of, like, brings you into that a bit, whereas you need outlets for your emotion, you need things in your life that matter to you or that bring you that joy, that bring you that purpose.
Yeah.
And I also feel like the way we treat mental illness is a very like, all right, you come in, we'll fix you, you'll leave, rather than a lot of people have chronic mental illness issues, like yeah. people don't get that how you were saying, like, you needed therapy, like, you're going there for years, like, it's not always,
you're not fixed.
Yeah, it's yeah. not always a fixed thing or not always a get better, but a management thing.
Yes, exactly. Mm. And if you don't have, like, obviously, like, in terms of if you don't have the skills, that's why you're going to the doctors and the psychologists and to just get turned away or told, like, oh, just use the skills that you have. Like, it can, just brings you down even further.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I do want to add that although I do fart on the public mental health system, like, that system has saved my life multiple mm-hmm. times, and there is a support network there. I think I may have got lucky in that, you know, they give you a case manager, a mm-hmm. psychologist, a dietitian, an OT, even a physiotherapist. Like, that, those services are there, mm-hmm. but it's not widely known
yeah.
or accessible.
It's yeah, because I have been in the same position through the same hospital
yeah.
where I had that, but then now. They don't want to do that for me. But
yeah.
then, like you say, also not shitting on the public system, but, like, we've been through the respite. We found out about, like, the respite through in our area. Not in our area, but, like, where we live. And it's run through the hospital, but it's, like, a public house with nurses. And
mm-hmm.
you can go there and, you know, usually, typically share rooms with people. It's like a big house. There's TVs, there's men and women and theys and thems and... And
lemons and
lemons and yeah, sheep. But it's just really nice. Like, they take, so you don't have, like, full control. You give them your medication, you know, you have to be home by a certain time, but you can come and go as you please. You can just sit there, and everyone is just, because they're all going through the same shit.
It's a local community base, and you can connect with the people. Like, mental illness was so isolating. I think one of the biggest things was finding community.
Yeah. And honestly, whenever you do find community, I think that's always when I feel better. I go there and I don't know anyone, and I leave a week later and I've made, like, you know, even though some of, like, those people are a bit, you know, but, like, you have really good... Oh, there's a pussycat
here. Oh, I didn't know the
darling.
Cat was in the room.
Hello,
mittens.
Me too. Hello, darling. But, yeah, no, community... is the biggest thing at the end of the day. Like, you always have to have people around to support you.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, like, when you have people who support you and people who understand, your experience of life is so much different.
Yes. And you're not, because I feel like when you're mentally unwell, you feel so alone. And not that you want to share it, but having someone else to just be there to, like, be like, look, I'm here. Even if they don't understand, they will... take it on and be like, what can I do to help? And honestly, most of the times I've been unwell, it's only been because I've had people that have been there to be like, hey, let's go do this, let's go change the mind, like, change your brain space up, that's
yeah.
made it better.
Even, like, a change of scenery, like, let's get out of the house, can do such a massive thing.
Sometimes even getting out of bed is the hardest thing.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Let alone walking to the park.
Yeah, it is really hard. I remember learning once, like, when you're in a depression, you should do the opposite of what you want to do, which is so hard.
It's so hard.
When you feel like you're carrying around 1,000 kilos of bricks on your back and from the top of your head, like, I don't know, even, like, doing the things that you like, or I feel like as long as you go back to basics and you're like, okay, I've eaten today, I've had a shower, I'm drinking water.
Mm.
I just sat outside for 5 minutes, you know, at least that. The bare minimum is all you can do sometimes.
I did a course on basically how to be depressed through the public health system.
Nice.
And the one thing I got out of that was behavioural activation. And so because you're in bed and you can't get out of bed, so you just take it, you just make it small, like, okay, put my socks on.
Mm-hmm.
By putting your socks on, it gets your brain moving, and then you put your shoes on, yeah. And then you say, okay, just, you don't have to do anything in the shed, just open the shed door. And then by opening the shed door, it kind of, like, it gets the motor going a bit.
Absolutely.
And that skill, yeah, that
so
is a very beneficial skill that people should know about.
Doing the first thing is the hardest.
Yeah.
But once you've made it out of bed, or once you're like sat up rather than laying down.
Have that shower, you know, brush those teeth that haven't been brushed in however
so
many
long.
Fucking weeks. Like.
But yeah, no, the back to basics thing is so essential, because everything just becomes really difficult, and doing things you enjoy, you don't get the enjoyment out of it for a while,
mm-hmm.
but that will come back. You just need to look after your baseline and get that baseline back for a lot of it. Like you're like, I need to eat food that is good for me, or like I just need to eat, or I just need to like for a while I would wash my face, not with water but like with a wet wipe thing, because I couldn't stand up for ages or whatever, and just doing what you can, and just like that's enough. You're just doing something little bit,
something
improve.
Yeah,
because when you're in it, you literally, you can't see, like, you know in your head, like, okay, it's just gonna get better, I'm going to get there, but you feel
can't see
like
out of that hole,
you
when
just,
you're in a deep, dark
there's
pit.
No end of, there's no light at the tunnel. You just feel like like you are the worst. And it's
so true that it will get better,
mm.
but I absolutely hate it when people said that to me, because it's freaking sucks.
Kind of condescending.
It is.
Like, I know,
like,
it will get better,
but
it fucking sucks right now.
Exactly. And I think admitting that it sucks is okay, and being like, well, it won't be like this forever, or like
yeah
I can,
but you
work
feel
out of this.
Like it will,
mm-hmm.
so
mm-hmm.
it's like you, it's like that thing where you're like telling yourself one thing and believing in, I don't know, it's like two people, then you're like, oh, it'll get better, actually no, it won't. Maybe you should
when
the cat wants you to rub its body.
When I'm in my last depression, which went for however many months, I'm an artist and I always have been, it's an integral part of who I am. But when I'm depressed, my brain tells me that you're a shit artist and everything you make sucks and there's no point doing it. And that's really hard when it's like a core part of you and that's deteriorating.
Yeah.
And I just, for months, I couldn't go into my studio. I couldn't make anything. And I just said, Naish, go inside. All you have to do is move paint around.
Mm-hmm.
So I put out canvases and I moved paint around on these canvases. And I thought, this is fucking stupid. Nothing, like, thought nothing of it, put them away. 5 months later, like, looked at them, most amazing, beautiful, abstract clouds I could have never dreamed of painting ever. And I'm like, how did I even do that? You know, but when at the time my brain's saying, like, everything's bad, and that's it's chemical. And then 5 months later, when I can actually think rationally and real, and I see these paintings that I made when I was in pain. And I'm proud of them. And I'm proud that I moved paint around that one day in 5 months, you know.
Absolutely. And it's like, it doesn't have to be good. But also, that trying to distinguish between your mental illness brain and logic is so hard.
It's hard.
Like, it's so easy with a physical illness to differentiate that from your being. But with mental illness, it can be so hard to, like, be like, oh, that's not me, that's my mental illness, and it's not true. But it makes you feel like everybody hates you, or it makes you feel like you made the most worst fuck up in your entire life, even though it was, like, this tiny thing that ever people didn't notice. Or it makes you feel like food is the enemy, but it's not.
It's scary.
You do
start to believe that sick brain, and it starts to
trust
the truth.
Yourself,
yeah.
And it's just, it's a really,
fuck off.
Like, self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you believe your shit, so you're like, why try? And then you feel like shit. And trying to break that can be really difficult, but it is absolutely possible at the same time.
Mm.
Yes.
We get stronger. Mm. We do.
Yeah. Even if you... Especially, like, the last one I had was, honestly, like, really bad. And I just thought, like, this is it. Like, I actually started being like, oh, God, I'm just gonna, you know, you start, like, getting really self-harmy and suicidal ideation. And I had to go and stay in, like, a respite, not like a hospital, but kind of like a step down, step up facility where there was nurses and stuff. And I was there for 2 weeks and I just felt like it was just never going to end. Like I would wake up, I would sleep 16 hours a day. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't eat, like just little things. And Niche would be the one that would be like, come on, we're going to go out. Or we'd go to this and we'd go and do that. And even when you go, you just feel like, why am I here? Like, you're just a burden. Like, you're just, like, everything. Your brain's just fully against you. Mm-hmm. But you do. You just have to, like, ride the wave. Like, you just have to ride it out.
And
it's
literally a skill that you learn. Mm. Like, the more you go out, the more you'll feel like, oh, no, people enjoy my presence. I'm not a burden. Or, like, the more you eat, the easier it gets to eat. You know, the more often you do it, you know, it's kind of like that muscle be like, oh yeah, I know how to do this now. But building that up, it's so intense and difficult.
I remember a poem that I wrote when I dragged Possum out to a gig that would have been, you would have loved it. It's one of your favorite local bands.
Yeah.
And the poem's something like, objectively, this is a good time, but my brain is telling me that I want to die.
I love that.
And one day I'm scared that I will believe it or something. And it will happen.
It's not gonna happen because we build up skills and community support as well.
Absolutely. Like, and that's something I really loved about the online space. Just seeing other people who are going through it. You know, hearing their stories or just like finding people in real life who have the same experiences as you. I don't know how to explain that, but having people around you who get it makes it so much easier.
You feel seen and understood.
Not having to constantly advocate for yourself, I think.
Yeah.
People who understand what you're going through and aren't going to push your limits.
Yeah. And not having to, like, you can sit there with them and be brutally honest and say the most outrageous things that, you know, like, self-harm things or something, and they're just like, oh, my God, I get it. Like, this is what I do. You know, if you said that to any one of your family members or your friends, they'd look at you with this what is wrong with you, like
really concerned.
It is sometimes that's what you need though, like you just need to vent and just be like, oh, or just like, you know, do the weird crazy shit. Like
my therapist said to me, it was like, hold ice instead of self-harming.
Yes,
just like practical tips like that you get from people who've gone through it have been so helpful.
It is so much easier when people are there. Like it's hard being like in our day of age. Like, I don't know, I feel like half my friends, you know, they're like, oh yeah, I've been through mental illness, but like when you have real hectic, like multiple diagnoses, you know, a couple hospital visits here and there, it is really hard to fit in with people. Like, it, no one really gets it, and you do end up just feeling like you're too much or the burden, and it's shit when you lose people around you, but like,
yeah,
I don't know, if they don't get it, then maybe that's the way it's meant to be.
Yeah, maybe
you know?
They're not your people.
You just got to be aware.
Yeah. And I think it gets easier. I think putting yourself out there, making friends or having conversations when you're not really doing stuff, or like, it gets easier, or like you're able to slowly start doing more. Difficult as exercising is really hard for me. I haven't exercised in a long time. That's my thing that I'm trying to work on.
I've told myself that this year I'm going to teach myself how to rollerblade.
Nice. That's actually my goal too. I have rollerblade.
It's funny. Like I feel like I'm a very, in some ways, very self-aware. Like if someone around me is struggling with something, I can be like, okay, you could do this and this and this, and it will get so much better. But for myself, when it happens, I just avoid everything, and I'm just like, no, I'd rather be in this depression.
It takes effort to get out of a bad place.
Mm.
So you just want to like avoid it. I struggle to sit in the feeling. So when someone else is struggling with it, I'm like, oh, do this, this and this. This helped me. This other person said this. But sometimes you just got to be like, this is what I'm feeling.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
I think in the end of that quite hectic depression, I just, when you like let it go and you don't force change on it is when it starts to be like, oh, okay, everything, oh, the sun's a bit brighter today. Like, not in a nice way, like, everything started to get easier.
Because don't fight it. Don't resist it.
Yeah, and just, like, you're allowed to feel whatever you feel. Like, yeah. Right now, it feels really intense and stormy, but, like, oh, in this other moment, it feels really, like, sunny and happy, and just being like, this will pass, and not letting yourself sink into it.
Yeah.
I wanted to add, you know, how the doctors are like, exercise, it's good for your mental health. Eat well, it's good for your mental health. Get some sleep, it's good for your mental health.
Sounds so patronizing.
It's true. And then you actually do the thing and you actually do exercise or go for a fucking walk. I call them the little mental health walkies.
Love it.
And then it actually does make you feel better and you're like, oh, what? The doctor was right?
And it sounds so horrible because you're like, I can't get out of bed, I feel horrible. And they're like, I'll go for a walk. You're like, I fucking can't, but it does actually
work.
It's like the last thing you want to do, but it does work.
I viewed it as like, I have to look after my mental illness the way you look after a child. It'd be like, I know you don't want to eat right now, but that is what your body needs.
That's a really nice analogy.
Or just like the love that you would give your sister or like your partner or whatever you have to give to yourself would be like, yeah, I know sleep, the bed is really comfortable, but the sun's really comfortable. Why don't we get warmth from a different place?
Go sleep outside.
Yeah. I would literally do that. Like, I would take my nap outside so at least I'm in a different environment or, like, I can listen to the birds and stuff.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to mother yourself sometimes if no one else is there.
Absolutely.
Because I guess it is, like, it's just, like, your inner child.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, it is a good, I don't know, it is a good thing.
Yeah. What has helped you in terms of, like, other people supporting you or you supporting yourself, like in terms of accommodations or things that help you, be that mental illness wise or neurodivergent wise?
I think for me it's always been, like I said before, I think I'm really upfront with employers.
Mm-hmm.
And I right now I only try to get employed by people I actually know. Mm-hmm. Because they tend to understand me more.
Yeah.
And not be so like, oh, accommodation.
Yeah, or like, new and frightening.
Yeah, so I do that, and I am just really honest. So, like, if I go into a job, I will have those big conversations. Like, look, this sometimes, or right now, I'm going to have a panic attack. Like, I need to take 10 minutes. Or, like, I'm going to bring this little stimmy toy thing with me, and you're going to see me moving it around in weird ways, but it's just making me feel better. Like, I'm not going to hurt you or anything. But, I feel like my friends, for myself, becoming really knowledgeable on what was going on for me and how I could make it better than just telling my friends. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like with my friends, slowly I just started to little things like stimming and stuff, and then just having the conversations like, oh, like I actually I want to get diagnosed with this thing. And I mean, if they love you, they're going to understand, they're going to take it on.
Yeah.
And if they don't, well, then that's really, you know, there's always going to be losing people in the process. But I think that that's probably for the best.
Yeah. And just being really comfortable with yourself and allowing yourself to accommodate yourself.
Yeah.
Being like, this is what I need right now. And I'm allowed to do that.
Yeah. Like buying all the things, get the stimmy toys, get the therapy weighted blanket, get the, you know, whatever you need, for yourself first, like get the noise cancelling headphones. Like, you got to trial things to know what works for you and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. And then from there you can sort of gauge with other people.
Yeah. I
struggled with that question, but brain went to when I was in the art school, I started working for someone who's now one of my best friends, who run an upcycling, repurposed arts business. And they had no vision whatsoever. So completely blind. We worked together and I would support them. And I was trained as a chef, and then I started supporting a young autistic man to overcome sensory challenges. And so all of a sudden I'm in this like disabled community. And then, you know, one job, another job, working for another little kid. Yeah. And then a few years down the track, all of a sudden, I'm disabled. I went through an episode and, you know, now I have a community of people who love me and see me for who I am. And I've found that over the last couple of years, most of the people that like stick around through the shit, that they kind of get it. They have lived experience in one way or another. And I find a lot of strength in the disabled community in that, just like loving and supporting, and like the unwritten CRIP rules, like you can leave whenever you need to, you don't have to come, you can cancel, like
you can rest.
You can rest. Rest is necessary. Rest is best, they say. Yeah, so
rest has been a massive like, thing.
For friends me. That will invite you 19 times and you'll say no, and then on the 20th you're like, actually, yeah, I'll go. And it's like, you know, maybe some people after the third no would stop inviting you.
I've had that a lot.
Yeah, I think it's a common experience for disabled people. Yeah. Where I guess non-disabled people think it's a choice. Like, you're choosing to stay in bed for 6 months. Yeah,
like the social etiquette is like, oh, I've invited you out 3 times and you said no, it means you don't like me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I'm actually just not able to do it this time.
My body actually can't get me there, or I actually don't have the capacity to.
Yeah.
And it's nice to be invited, even if you can't go.
And just people being mindful of being like, oh, how's your social battery at the moment? Or like, how's your fatigue? We're thinking of going to this place. Are you okay to walk? Or should we take the car? Just like, having the options for accessibility, it can be hard to advocate for yourself in a social group. I find it so much easier to advocate for myself in the doctor's office or an appointment or whatever. But being like, no, this is what I need.
I feel like at least in my community, there's a lot more understanding and at least the vocabulary around it. I love spoons, where my friends are like, have you got the spoons? Or they'll say, sorry, don't have the spoons. And it's like, oh, cool.
What is a spoon?
Spoons. You have so many spoons, and that's your capacity. And if I say, hey, POS, want to come to this thing? It's like, oh, no, but not because I don't want to come, but because I don't have the capacity or I don't have the spoons.
Right. I've never heard that one.
Yeah, so
it's
good to think things take energy that people don't realize.
Definitely. Even like little things, like big crowds. Like for me, I just can't. Especially recently, like with protesting, like I want to be a part of the protest, but going to a protest would literally send me into a panic attack, or like I have to have someone there and then all the people will stress me out, and then all the noise and I don't know where I am and blah, blah.
That was a weird one for me, where I was like, oh, protests, used to really go to those, and now kind of don't go to those. And I thought, well, Niche, like, what about sacrifice a little bit of your discomfort for the pain and turmoil that a lot of people are going through right now? Like, I don't know, it was a weird one to, but then I found there was a peaceful protest where everyone sang, so I went to that.
No, you bring up a really good point, because like protests often involve a lot of walking. I don't do walking well. My body doesn't really like walking. Or like, there's so many topics that I'm so passionate about, but advocacy is really emotionally draining. So I can't always do as much as I want. And sometimes I don't do much, if any. And I feel really bad about that.
I think,
and that's a valid point. Like, I do want to do more, but it's also like,
you can't.
Difficult to like, accommodate yourself in that. Like, there's sometimes you just can't.
So much advocacy and so much protesting that you can do from bed, you know.
Yeah,
and there actually is a lot.
Yeah, and I think,
and there's space for that, you know.
That's why I've started getting into art again, and particularly writing and poetry. I'm like, that is my protest. Like, I will write my experiences, and I'll write things and or draw things that I care about, and that matters, because you're putting emotion and feeling into it.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you feel like experiencing discrimination can intensify or maybe even create like mental illness or like chronic illness and that sort of thing? Because they're like, so I have fibromyalgia, and it's been recognized that sometimes people with like trauma will get fibromyalgia as a result. So I feel like those experiences are very interlinked.
Oh yeah. No, I believe that all of my mental illnesses come from all the trauma I experienced as a child. And then in saying the same way, like, yeah, any trauma you experience is going to in turn turn into a trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Turn into a...
Like, your Your body holds any, the score.
Yes, yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, you, mm-hmm. it's always going to... you. It's going to, like, shape the way that you interact in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. I think it's kind of a sad realization when you... you're like, oh, I have this complex mental health condition, and then you look at why,
mm-hmm.
how do these happen, and I see all of that.
Especially
other stuff
when like you have parents that will tell you that that's not real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that invalidation I think is a lot more powerful than people realize, whether that comes from parents or doctors or whatever. Because your mental illness already makes you kind of question and distrust yourself,
mm-hmm.
or like especially
totally.
Invisible
yeah.
illness and chronic illness. I didn't feel sick enough, or I was like, am I pretending? Everyone's telling me that I am. To be able to trust yourself and trust your body can be really difficult.
Having a mind that's like wired against you, and you have to constantly overcome and constantly reassure, no, that's your sick brain being really loud. Mm-hmm. Actually, I feel this. It's exhausting having to look inwards and to constantly check yourself, and you think you know, you think you got it, you're like, oh no, and then all of a sudden you don't got
it.
It's really confusing.
Having to pretend, or like I know within the neurodivergent community, like having to mask is exhausting.
Put on a front.
Yeah, and I did feel that with my queerness. Like once I came out, or I kind of removed myself a bit from a situation that wasn't as supportive, my fatigue got a lot better. And I was wondering if that was the case with like neurodivergency. Do you find that it's more difficult to cope when you're in an environment that isn't supportive of you?
Definitely.
Yeah.
300%.
Especially with like the, I guess it presents as Tourette's and like the stimming,
mm-hmm.
when I'm having to hold that in, that's exhausting. I can't even like go to my yoga class anymore because I have to hold in so much that you can't. It's you're so tired. And
because I had that with like I dress often in a way that's either a bit or is gender non-conforming, and when I had to hold that in, it made it want to come out more. It made it more intense, and I wonder if that's the same with trying to hold in like stims and like Tourette's and verbal stims and stuff. Like the more you have to hold it in, the more it comes out.
When you have to hold it in all day, when you get home, it is a fucking party screamo show. Like, it's ruthless, and you pay for it as well. Like, I know my best friend has fibro, and he like when he has to put on that front and go and do the work, like it's 3 days in bed. Like, not, and that's not a choice. You're not choosing to be in bed.
And I think that's the thing. People often, like, they're seeing, like, oh, you look fine and you're doing all the things, but they don't see the aftermath and the consequences of, like, I'm so exhausted, I can't do anything else. And people are like, oh, why can't you only work 4 or 5 hours? I'm like, well, because I have to spend the rest of the day recovering.
Yeah, they don't see you with the mask off. You know, they only ever see one side of you. I think it's also, it takes a lot out on your emotions as well when you have to hold that stuff in, because like deep down you just want to be yourself, and you have to feel like you have to fully change just to be around people that you think love you. But then if they loved you, then why can't you just be?
Why do you have to hide?
Why do you have to hide? Why can't you just be you?
Absolutely. And it makes you feel like you're not valued. To be like, oh, I have to change myself. Even, like, within the disability space, like, I have to change myself to be accepted and stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably why, like, niche, what you were saying, like, the community is so important, because you don't have to do that with them.
Yeah.
And it's not exhausting to be around those kind of people.
It makes sense that most of my close friends now have some sort of disability or neurodivergence. Like,
It's so weird because sometimes I forget I'm disabled. I'm so accustomed to accommodating myself, and I'm so surrounded with people who have similar experiences to me that when I go out in the world and I forget that that's not quote-unquote normal, I get a bit shocked. It's like a bit of a culture shock, and I was like, oh, what do you mean? You're just fine all the time.
Yeah.
Or like, what do you mean you don't have afternoon naps? I need
Regulatory naps in the self-regulation room with the eye mask and the blanket and the low lights.
I used to do that. I called it my brain dead time. It was like weighted blanket, eye mask, noise cancelling headphones, blinds closed, no music, eyes closed.
That's literally what we've been doing.
Just like need to like recover and relax.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I'm at capacity.
Yeah, sweet.
I think I'm getting to the end.
Sounds good. I didn't have any more questions anyway, and we've almost been talking for an hour. So
thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you.
That
so fun.
That was a beefy conversation.
Oh, we are so reaching the maximum. Hey, thanks so much for listening. That was Chronically Me with Nathan Possum. Stick around for our next episode. That will be just as awesome, as I really loved this deep dive that we went on. And remember, if you're struggling with mental health or mental illness, to reach out to friends, family, and support services.